Seder of the night is a sort of program of freedom. Talking about Kaddish as sanctifying a certain time and space, which would be a point of reference for us, some place that we could generate from. So we need one kind of define the moment or space and use as our point of departure. So that's the Kaddish, sanctifying time, sanctifying beginning, sanctifying point from which we begin. Then you move off to Rochatz. So in order for us to understand the Rochatz, we have to talk about several things. The Rochatz is really intertwined with Karpas. Because the reason that we wash is because we're going to dip the vegetable in water. When anything grows, obviously the only way it can grow is by being supported by, nurtured by water. Rain, irrigation, water is a necessary element in the growth of virtually everything. The water which nourishes something when it's growing does not render it in any which way open to receiving tuma. As long as something is growing, it can't be metameyat. So a sheret, dead body, whatever, it will not be mekabel tuma when it is growing, when it's attached to the ground. So it's not until after fruit or grain has been harvested that it becomes susceptible to tuma. So once it has received some cut, it now is in a place where it can receive tuma, but there is still one other requirement, and that is that once it's been detached from the ground or from the tree or whatever that it grows on, it needs to come in contact with water
to become tuma.
Right. So just in a certain contrary way. Here, water is dependent on its being alive, but over here, it is now open to be compromised by water because the water now renders it in a state of susceptibility. Up until that point, it's not going to come to it. So even after you cut it, sherets, an avela, anything touches it, which is tummy, unless it has, one way or another, has received water, even if the water is gone now, even if right now it's dry, but once it's been cut and water has come upon it, even if now there is no water there, but the fact that water came upon it renders it now, it's now in a state of like a big little light that would go on, little light would say ready. Even once it's detached, it still doesn't move. That's when the water, two conditions. One is that it's no longer connected to the ground. The second is that water has come upon it. The third condition is that the water has to have come upon it with the approval of whoever is the proprietor of the food. So if somebody were to pour the water on it against the will of, that he didn't want it to get, then it won't render it susceptible. It has to be that if he doesn't mind, it's also the same. In other words, it doesn't require direct desire to have it get wet. I'm okay if it gets wet. I'm okay with it. Because we're not talking about something being inherently wrong, problematic. It's the question is, what is going to set up this grain or this fruit to be open to receiving tuma? Okay, anyway, so we've identified three preconditions for something to become susceptible to tuma. One is that it's got to be detached from the place where it's growing. The second is that it's got to get wet. The third, even if it's not wet now, but it has to have gotten wet. The third is that the getting wet of it has to be with the approval of the proprietor. Be mindful of that. We have the following contents. Number one, that we have the issue that in order to establish an awareness of tuma, in other words, people who have not been careful about the things that they have become involved with. Right? So it's possible that they will become tummy. Of course, there are different things because you can, touch a dead body, become very tummy, or you can touch a shirt, you become a little bit less tummy. There's all different kinds of levels of tuma. And generally speaking, with the exception of azav, most tumas can be removed, some of them after a certain specific amount of time has passed by immersion in a mikvah. So what removes tuma is water. Right? So you've got water which makes something susceptible to tuma and water which removes. So you have water, which is in this case, is removing the tumor. We have a thing as follows, that in order to maintain an awareness, in order to maintain an awareness of the ways in which we can compromise something, we have this halacha, which mandates that we wash our hands before we eat bread. Which really has more to do with, not so much to do with us, it has more to do with the Kohen and Truma, because there's nothing which restricts us, an Israelite, from eating something which is tummy. So he'll compromise himself briefly. The problem is the Kohen with Truma, because Truma you're not allowed to compromise it, so. But there were even amongst people who weren't Kohen, there was this concept of eating chulin b'tahara. So it doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be truma, I don't have to be Kohen, but there's this state, it's an awareness, it's living in a frame of reference where you are aware of what's going on. It's just being aware of everything. So if you want to, for example, eat chulin b'tahara, you want to eat just plain bread in the state of tahara, you don't get. So you take all kinds of precautions. And anyway, one of the things that you would do in being careful not to transmit tuma is before you eat bread, which has been rendered, obviously, because in order to make bread, you got to pour water into it. This bread may have been totally produced under conditions of tahara, but I could be metame that by my hands. The idea is that in the washing of the hands, that the awareness or the concept that you're trying to preserve over here is that you won't, the hands which are whatever they are, whatever, will not affect whatever you're eating by transferring to them because you washed your hands. So in certain instances, the Chacham said, if you wash your hands, that will then act against the transmission of tumor. Okay, now we have another issue over here, which is that the same thing is true not only about bread. The same thing is true about a fruit or a vegetables. That when you get them wet and you want to eat them, you should wash your hands. The Achronim, for whatever reason, have indicated that that practice has sort of fallen out of use. However, on the night of Pesach, we are aware of that because we're about to dip a vegetable in salt water. Now, dipping a vegetable in salt water, which obviously is a little bit wet, means that if we go back to that earlier body of law, then you should not eat it with hands that might be tummy, just like you wouldn't eat bread without washing your hands. Okay, so the reason then that we wash our hands for urchatz is because of the karpas. In order for us to maintain that tradition that just like you wash your hands, this, however, we don't make a bracha because we're not the only time there is a bracha that was at the creed of brachas when you're eating a meal as opposed to eating a fruit or a vegetable, so there's no bracha for that hand wash. One other fact that we'll attend to is the fact that when you make the bracha on the karpas, which is the Bori Pri Adama, that a person is supposed to bear in mind that he wants this Bori Pri Adama to apply to the moror, which he's going to eat later on. You don't want to make two brachas on the moror. But it does require two brachas, one for the mitzvah of the moror and one because it's a Bori Pri Adama. So the only way to get around that is to make the bracha Bori Pri Adama earlier on the karpas and have in mind the moror. So there are a variety of reasons. One of the reasons that appealed to me most was just like on the tochacha, when you call up people to that portion of the Torah where they have all of these punishments. So you don't break it up. Some people don't make a bracha at all together. It's because it's so painful that you don't want to make him think. The Mora represents pain and affliction. So you prefer not to make a bracha on it. You make a bracha on something else. Let me deal with that briefly. There's in the scheme or the design of creation, there's a problem with the appearance of evil. The appearance of evil in the world, because God is perfect, and He's perfectly good and perfectly holy. So there has to be some explanation about how God designed creation so that evil could appear without His being a person who crafted evil. That's really what this concept of Shriya Sakyan goes on. It's not God actively creating evil. It's evil appearing by God's removing Himself from something shattering. Anyways, but here's the interesting concept that there are things that God created at the very beginning, of which God brought the world into being, where one speaks of something that is perfectly sacred and holy, but despite the fact that if you were to examine this, you would not be able to find anything at all that might foretell the appearance of evil. In this emanation, there is already the precursor to that which will allow evil to happen. Now, for example, if you were to take a seed and examine the seed, it would be difficult, I think, even with an electronic microscope, to identify where in that seed is the stalk or the peel. In the seed, it's all in an indefinable, if you will, kind of indivisible state. It doesn't emerge until there's all kinds of, it goes through all kinds of other changes and then combines with the earth and the sun and then this, you know. So where is the peel of the apple in that seed? It's not, you can't find it. In a similar way, in these earliest definitions of creation, there is the beginning of that which allows evil to happen without there being anything evil there. At that point, it's so integrated, it is so united that it is not evil. And yet, that's in a certain sense, when we make a bracha on the moror, there's an earlier stage at which we're accounting for the moror, when there is no moror. Right. We're making a bracha on something which is not there yet. It's delicious. Right now we're eating something that's delicious and it's fine. We enjoy it. It's good. But we already have in mind that this is going to apply to a bitter herb which emerges later on. So that's true of the way in which things and devolve in our lives, when right now something is perfectly innocuous, but in whatever it is that were very innocuous things, you have the seeds of what later on turns to be very problematic.